Hey everybody, thanks for being here. By the way, throughout this podcast, which we are taping, you'll be able to listen to later. If you have any questions, we're going to just talk about this current affairs of the Mets. Feel free, they'll find a microphone, you can ask it throughout the show, interrupt us, whatever we're talking about at the time.
It's like tweeting questions at us, but you're actually people, and we're actually in the same room.
It's wild.
Imagine that, it's amazing.
So, first I want to start with this. Andy, a couple minutes ago, tweeted that Doug and I are here at the Queens Baseball Convention.
It's true.
Ready to take questions if you have them. And there are people commenting to your tweet like, no. Are those people here? Are they just over there, like, refusing to come in and ask questions? There are people responding to your tweet saying, no, I'm not interested in asking questions. I'm wondering if those people are like, no, I'm home and I don't want to come to the Queens Baseball Convention, or if they're at the bar.
I'm sure you're all the nice people on Twitter.
So,
but
last week we taped our podcast right before the Mets signed Jed Lowrie, and we were talking about, in fairness to Brody and the Mets, we were talking about the fact that they were kind of relying on the J.D. Davis trades, the Keon Broxton trades, like giving up their own prospects to acquire talent.
Right.
And what the point I was making was, there are Met fans out there, I'm sure some of you agreed with this before the Lowrie signing, if you're going to acquire depth, why not just sign guys? If money's the only thing you have to give up instead of trading potentially valuable prospects for a guy like J.D. Davis. The Lowrie signing, in your opinion, what did it mean to Brody? How does he view that moving forward?
Well, it means, I think, that they're trying to build as deep of a roster as they can with as much flexibility and as many options for Mickey Callaway that he could. You've got an everyday player in Jed Lowrie who's going to get as many plate appearances as an everyday player, but moving around the infield a little bit, and it shows. The way it was explained to me by Mets people, and I think the best, we've talked about this before if you guys have listened to the podcast, but you know how last year it would be like a Sunday, day game after a night game, Jacob deGrom is pitching, and like Matt Dendecker's in the outfield,
yeah.
Or like Luis Guillorme is, I mean, if Matt and Luis, if you're here, I apologize, but you know, like you could use a better B team.
Right.
And Brody's trying to build more depth, build a better B team, so what a guy like J.D. Davis does, he's the B team. He if he makes the team, and I would assume he'll be up at some point this year. But what Lowrie is straddling that line between the A and the B team, because he can move around, he can do this, he can do that, he can switch hit,
yeah.
He can play different positions, but he's going to be doing something or other just about every day, meaning that you're going to have less of a drop-off, and hopefully poor Jake DeGrom gets fewer 1-0 losses next year, because they've got, look, I know you all here were thrilled probably that Jose Reyes was on the roster all last year. That's the kind of thing that they're trying to avoid. They're trying to have better players 1 through 25, and it'll bear itself out, obviously, in how the team plays if it actually worked. But that's their goal. That's their thinking.
I don't know. Maybe I haven't been paying close enough attention, but when the Mets signed Jed Lowrie, I looked at his stats for last year. I was blown away.
Great.
I mean, 99 runs batted in. He's a really impressive player. The thing is, he's in his mid-30s. He's just a really solid player. My problem is, and I keep coming back to this, I worry that the Mets, like, they've had in the past these almost automatic 30 home run guys. Yoenis Cespedes is pretty much that. Lucas Duda was that, even though he'd go through these incredible peaks and valleys. And then Jay Bruce was that. And
right.
All three of those guys, two of them are gone. The third, you don't think you're going to get in 2019. I like the idea of watching a Mets team every day. I don't know about you guys, that is not totally reliant on the long ball. It's not home runs or just strikeouts. I like the idea.
Got a couple of fans of that idea. Yeah.
I do like the idea of some guys that can hit 20 home runs, but solid average, make contact. Like, that's the type of baseball I like to watch. But I do think that signing guys like Jed Lowrie, trading for J.D. Davis, Keon Broxton, it's all fine. It's just I keep coming back to them relying on Peter Alonso for power in 2019.
Which,
because they are going to need a guy four through six in their lineup who can hit over 30 home runs, and I don't think Todd Frazier provides that at this point in his career.
No. I mean, you wouldn't say definitely not, obviously, right. But probably not based on last year. Alonso is a maybe to give you anything next year because he hasn't ever played in the big leagues, of course. So, yeah, you're right. There's maybe a little bit of a deficit of power in the middle of the order. They're just trying to go one through nine, and if you've read John Harper, who, to my money, is the best baseball columnist we've seen in New York in my lifetime, wrote something just the other day for us at SMY about how Chili Davis, obviously the new hitting coach, is going to stress more contact and situational hitting than launch angle and power. And there's an intentional thing where the Mets are understanding, I think, their personnel and maybe getting away from that reliance on the long ball. Remember, Sandy Alderson loves the home run. He is totally open about that. I've had conversations with Alderson where, for all his analytics, he talks about how he really likes following the ball with his eyes and seeing if it's going to go over the wall and then standing up and cheering when it does.
Who doesn't
Nothing wrong
like
with that.
That.
It's a visceral experience. And Sandy Alderson from the 1980s in Oakland was a guy who was chasing the long ball because he liked it personally. And then he saw, he calculated in the early days of sabermetrics that the team that hits the more home runs than the other team is going to win almost all the time. He's not wrong. But point being, Sandy's not here anymore. And they're getting away from looking for the long ball to an extent.
At times it just felt like the wrong ballpark and the wrong roster to build your team around that philosophy. If you want to hit the long ball, small ballpark is preferable. And also, you know, guys who are guaranteed to give you 30 to 40 home runs a year should be scattered throughout your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But my next question, actually, you filled in for Steve Gelbs at the Jed Lowry
I did.
Presser. How'd you think that went?
I thought it went fine. I apparently was nodding my head too vigorously. If any of you saw that,
on Baseball Night in New York, we slowed it down. It was just for about 60 seconds, just some quick nods. You look like a bobblehead briefly.
I'm either a good listener or a phony. You guys can decide which it is. But when Jed was talking, I apparently was very engaged. I thought he's a very interesting guy. You know, like, not that any of this applies to the Mets winning or losing games, but I think the cool thing about baseball is we get to know these players. And by we, I don't mean reporters. I mean fans, because you're watching them play this slow game day in and day out. So their personalities, to me, matter. And Jed Lowry, like, his wife was a former State Department diplomat. Like, that's not normal in baseball. Jed himself went back to get his degree after he turned pro, which he was one of, like, 20 guys in baseball that had done that at the time. So he's an interesting dude, and it was nice to spend some time with him. And as far as how I did, I think that I probably did fine, but Steve Gelbs is Steve Gelbs for a reason, and
yeah,
Kevin Burkhardt before him. Live interviewing is a real skill.
Can't become Gelbs overnight, that's for sure. I've learned that the hard way. Here's the next thing, and I want you guys to answer this question as well. So find the microphone if you – actually, yeah, it's not a question you'd be asking. I want to hear what you guys – if there is another press conference at Citi Field before the start of the season, who do you want to see introduced? And I the easy answer is
Bryce Harper.
Which I understand, wanting that.
Let's take Harper and Machado out of it for now, if you have any other players that you'd like to see the Mets introduce. But my question to you first, as they think of their answers to it, do you think there will be another press conference at Citi Field before the start of the season?
No, I don't. I think that there's a possibility that there would be an A.J. Pollock press conference if A.J. Pollock will take a one-year deal or will sign a deal where there's an opt-out attached to it after the first year. What's that?
We said signing in April and he's hurt in May.
That's the concern. No, that's fair, and that's the concern about Pollock. Obviously, the injury history and the Mets not necessarily wanting to go long-term on him. But if his market craters, he it's still like, I'm not saying expect it, but if you're asking me to say, will there be another press conference, that is one player who would merit one who it's like a 1% chance that they sign.
I agree with the Pollock skepticism with the injuries, and I think that's a big part of the reason he's not getting the money he wants right now. But I'm surprised to hear, and I don't know if it's just one fan, but like, do a lot of you guys agree you don't want to touch A.J. Pollock? Or do you, like, the way I think of it, if A.J. Pollock had signed with the Mets 3 weeks ago, kind of before the Bryce Harper and Manny Machado stuff has become as exhausting as it's been, you would have said that, in my opinion, it would have been the bow on top of a very solid offseason for the Mets. I would have looked at their outfield. Okay, they figured that out. Whether or not you like what they gave up for Edwin Diaz and Robinson Cano, that's two very good major league players, two all-star potential players. Right. I would have said this team is significantly better. But I think teams are looking at A.J. Pollock right now and thinking, I mean, am I really going to give him 4 years and a lot of money? Because he just doesn't have the ability to stay on the field. And even though his injuries have been freak injuries, sometimes players are prone to that given the way they play.
Yeah, I do think that he could end up being the consolation prize for one of the teams that wants Bryce Harper and doesn't get him, whether it's the White Sox or the Phillies or something like that. So that's probably why he hasn't signed yet. He's waiting on that. But getting back to the question about who the Mets could introduce, I do think they're pretty close to done. Did anybody have a suggestion they wanted to give on it?
Gio Gonzalez.
That's fair. Rotation.
Actually,
deck. Yeah.
Andy,
he's so good at City Field because he faced the Mets. All
I hate to give Andy credit, but I did think that was a very funny tweet when you had someone tweeted at you like, well, Gio Gonzalez has great numbers at City Field. And he's like, well, he's been facing the Mets. not a bad joke. Gio Gonzalez. I actually like the Hector Santiago signing.
Yeah.
And I know that that's not making any headlines. It's not necessarily the type of move that you categorize in terms of big moves of an offseason. But Hector Santiago is better than Vargas. And I know that's not a high bar, but the chances are that it's low. But if you put him at your five starter in your rotation and the other guys stay healthy, you're fine. Now, then as soon as you get talking about that topic, though, you get to what Brody wants to avoid, which is the ifs. And we've seen that the ifs affect the team most and in the starting rotation. Like, for us to say, yeah, I mean, the Mets starting rotation is going to be great. You got Noah Syndergaard, you got Zach Wheeler, you got Steven Matz, you got the Cy Young Award winner, Jacob DeGrom. You're going to be okay. I'm not sure you can rely on starting pitching at all to drive your team in the right direction. So I would, if they sign Gio Gonzalez, I'd like the signing. I'm just not sure that's Brody's priority right now.
Are you finished with your point now? Because this gentleman's been waiting to make a suggestion.
Oh, boy.
I'm so sorry.
Well, the first player I was wondering is Adam Jones. I think he would provide a good veteran presence. He would kind of be almost a mentor towards Broxton and Lagares. I know that they have experience in the league, but I feel like he would provide also a right-handed bat in that lineup, just a professional. I mean, last year was his worst year home run RBI-wise, but he still could hit. And then the question I have on top of that is the longer that Harper and Machado remain unsigned, is there a possibility that the Mets get into the sweepstakes? And are the Mets one of the mystery teams for Machado?
Okay, I'll take that. I'll start where you started, which was Adam Jones. They're not on Adam Jones. I've asked. As far as I know, that's not going to change. The way people around the game view him is dropping off precipitously with his skills, I think, and probably because he's a name.
He's also not a center fielder anymore.
No, he doesn't. I don't think he can play center anymore. And also somebody who's got mixed reviews on what kind of a guy he is in a clubhouse, frankly. Some good, some bad there. So I think that's probably why they didn't target him. Harper and Machado, look, I've asked that question of sources that I have repeatedly through the offseason, and I have not picked up on the Mets pursuing those guys. I think especially Harper, but either player obviously would be great fits, obviously. And I think that in the city too, just bringing a guy like that to New York, putting his face on billboards, what have you, I think it would be great, and it would be galvanizing to the franchise and to fans, I imagine, to have a star like that. But they just haven't pursued those players. And I was laying in bed last night, and I got a text from a source.
TMI.
That there was no. I'm well, maybe. I was okay. We'll go. We'll go. I was in my house.
Yeah.
And I got a text from a source saying that Manny Machado met with one of these mystery teams. Like, this is just last night that I found out about this. Was not the New York Mets. I actually don't know who it was. He had a meeting yesterday, I believe, with a team. Wasn't the Mets, and I haven't picked up on anything to indicate that it will be at this point. So that's just
when the report came out this week from Buster Olney that was later, you know, other reporters said, I'm not hearing the same thing, that Manny Machado had, I think, 7 years, 175. My reaction to that was every team in Major League Baseball should be in on him considering that price tag. And I know you agree with this, I have felt since the beginning that the Mets should be in on Bryce Harper, just because it feels like, whether it's a fit, like, I know they have a bunch of outfielders, but obviously he is such a superstar, that would make me really believe that the Mets in 2019 and beyond would be players for people like that. And they would send a totally different message to the fan base if they were to go after Bryce Harper.
And just the star power, too. I mean, maybe this isn't something that every fan would agree with. You just want your team to win games. To me, I think a Bryce Harper would be... I mean, he's such a name. He's such a... We've talked about this just between us, but how many baseball players could walk down the street in Manhattan and the average person, just average American, non-baseball-crazed person, would be like, hey, I know who that guy is. Probably not Machado.
That guy has ridiculous hair. That's Bryce Harper.
But, right, exactly. He's got the flow going. But I think that he brings that intangible star quality and that edge and that persona. If you hated him when he was a National, you'd probably like him if he was your guy. So for all those reasons, it would be great. All I can say is it's not Bruin.
And also, we actually talked about the division, the National League East, in our last show, because you can take each team's offseason on its own, right? So the Mets have had a solid offseason, I think. I think there's still more to be done, but it's solid. The problem, though, is that if Bryce Harper and Manny Machado were rumored to sign in any other division, you'd be like, okay. Like, I buy Brody thinking that he potentially has this built this team to be the favorite in the East. The problem is, if the Phillies are going to sign one of them, and let's say the Nationals bring back Harper, that is a big problem for the Mets. Because look at the Washington Nationals. Look how solid that roster is. Look at the Phillies, and before they fell off a cliff in the second half last year, that was a better team than the Mets, certainly, but it was a really solid team. And the Braves, if you think about their lineup and the youth, the power, the speed, the athleticism they have on that team, their pitching's still a problem, but that's a problematic division. And also a division where I don't think it's acceptable, given the Mets' current roster right now, to say that they're the favorites in.
I mean, I wouldn't consider them the favorites personally in the division. I think I try not to predict because seasons play. I mean, I bet you there's no one in this room that thought that anything other than the Nationals were going to win the division this year. I did. And then they stunk. They underperform, as they do, like every other year. So you don't really know. So I'm not saying I know who the favorite in the East is, but if you made me, like, make a wager, it probably wouldn't be the Mets right now.
But
they've improved a lot.
Yeah, and I'm curious to think, like, when I say I think the Mets offseason has been a success, like, if any of you guys have comments about that comment, like, do you guys agree with that? If you think just about the Mets roster, 25 men, you think about the additions they've made on the trade market, the signings they've made, do you feel better about the Mets team going to 2019 than you did last offseason?
Right.
Okay. So
the morale here sounds pretty good.
Is there a question over there? I saw a hand go up.
I think we have a microphone over here.
Right over there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andy, for taking a selfie with me.
You're welcome.
my question, I'm happy as a Met fan the way how it's gone, but I'm very concerned about my bullpen. My lefty, I want Aaron Loop, career 3.80. I'm thinking him. 2-year contract plus club.
I doubt Aaron Loop's even getting 2 years. I mean, no one's getting length. I will say Luis Avilan got a minor league deal, and he's really solid. And
I think that's your lefty, probably.
Yeah.
By the way, I mean, I'm not ruling out them signing somebody else, but I do think that's your lefty.
I don't know how to feel about the bullpen, because one of the points that I've kind of hammered home this offseason is I get the sense that people use Lugo and Gesellman in the starting pitching depth category and in the bullpen category. And the problem is, by June, they're going to be exhausted. You're not going to know what they are if you're using them for both. And I think they're very important in terms of how you grade the Mets bullpen. Like, I agree that it could potentially be a concern. Edwin Diaz is a lockdown closer. That is correct. But he had one great year. I don't know what it is in me, but I think it's just being a baseball fan, you look at every strength, and you're like, that could also fall off a cliff. You never
sure.
know.
And, of course, bullpen is probably the most volatile thing in the game. I think that, on paper, the eighth and the ninth innings are in pretty good shape. And then if Lugo can be Lugo, then you've got the seventh covered potentially, or the sixth or seventh, and you've got, and I don't have to, you all are Met fans, you know the roster, and you know who they have, but I think that there's a potential for it to be decent. I think that, like any team, they have to hope that their minor league signings and their depth signings, that there's a diamond in the rough there, and that whether it's Luis Avalon or someone else, or Hector Santiago, they're trying to build that depth. It all sounds good right now. You'll see how it plays out when these guys get to spring training and then when the bell rings in late March.
Is there any chance? I'd feel better about it if they brought Hansel Robles back. I'm joking. Don't worry. What was your... Oh, yeah.
I want Oli Perez back just for the comedy of it. I mean, what? Why not? Let me ask you this. Just give me by, like, boos or yays. Is enough water under the bridge with Oli Perez? Would you take him back? I guess that's a no. No, Oli. Too bad. He's a... Huh? You want Bartolo. Bartolo wants pitching to pitch.
Depth. He played a fascinating game in the newsroom last week. Is this retired player older or younger than Bartolo Colon? And I'm afraid I don't have the names in front of me that I use, but like Jay Payton.
Is he younger?
I think Jay Payton, Flynn might remember this, is the only one in this list that is slightly older. I'm talking maybe less than a year. Timo Perez, younger. Nick Johnson, former first baseman, 5 years younger.
And by the way, I bet you're glad you came to listen to this, because we just gave you Oli and Timo Perez, which was like a
more on actually more on favorites. More on Timo Perez in the Baseball Night in New York.
Todd Zeal will be here.
Todd Zeal's here, and we're gonna talk about why Timo Perez didn't score on his double off the wall at Yankee Stadium. But that's all another story.
That's favorite topic. There you go.
What do we think about the Familia contract looking back? Now that the because we're talking about the bullpen, now that the relief market has showed itself to be what it's been, there were a lot of guys. Cody Allen got a 1-year deal. Andrew Miller got a 2-year deal because of his health issues. Do you think the Mets did as well as they could to solve the eighth inning?
It turned out, value-wise, it turned out to be a slight overpay given where Adam Ottavino got $27 million.
Which doesn't bother me.
No, it's fine. Look, their style was to target what they wanted and strike and get a price that they thought was fair, and that's what they did. And Familia, I think that his notable screw-ups have obscured the fact that he's generally extremely effective. And having him in the eighth inning is something I would feel good about if I were a Met fan.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that he's just somebody, it's an intangible, but there's buy-in there. He really wants to be here. He went right to the Mets at the beginning of the offseason. He's like, I don't care what inning I pitch. I want to be a Met. And that's going to matter a little bit to a team, too. So that's where Familia is coming
but
from.
But I know that he's screwed up on big stages, too, and blown saves and the Giants and all that. I know that. But also there's this feeling where you sit down and watch a Familia ninth inning. You're like, okay, I feel pretty good. It's 2-1. One run, he'll get three outs. It's bottom of the lineup, and it's like six straight balls. And you're thinking to yourself, this is one of those Familia innings. He has a tendency not to give up some broken bat hits, not to give up some line drives. That's not his issue. He loses the strike zone, and on occasion, you have to get him out of there almost immediately. And I think that has skewed the perception of the type of pitcher he is into a place where you're like, you don't know what he's going to be. And then on Baseball Reference, you look at his stats at the end of the year, you're like, wow, he was a lot better. It's like the opposite. It's actually similar to Lucas Duda. Where did those 30 home runs come from?
Right.
I don't remember any of them.
And now that you mention it, that weakness needing to be taken out of the game the days he doesn't have it makes for a better eighth inning guy, because you get, if he doesn't have it, you get Diaz up and you bring him in for a 5-out save. So I think I like that as a setup signing.
The craziest night of your offseason, Andy, not socially but work-wise, was that at the winter meetings when you started to hear whispers of Yankees.
Of Familia?
No.
Oh God, the Syndergaard thing.
Well,
yeah,
the
that was crazy.
The reason I'm bringing it up is because, like, I don't know about you guys, but you just heard for a couple weeks this flurry of like trade rumors, right? You thought you had no idea who was safe. Is Michael Conforto going to be a Met? Is Brandon Nimmo going to be a Met? Noah Syndergaard could be gone. Like, and then the reporting that you had was, the Yankees are interested in Mets pitching. And it was like, we're not talking Jacob DeGrom, are we? Like, they have to give us...
Well, the Yankees are interested in Jacob DeGrom, all right,
well, yeah,
but they're not getting him.
Is trade talk just over? I mean, not that the Mets need JT Realmuto anymore, but like, he's still out there. And if the Mets feel like they could get a huge package for one of their starters or outfielders at this point, they could still technically do that.
They could still do it. I think that You want Aaron Judge? Would you guys trade DeGrom for Judge straight up? No. I'm just messing with you. All those crazy trade not rumors, because it was real. All that activity had to do with getting JT Realmuto, who Brody Van Wagenen wanted so bad that he was willing to say, all right, what I think about Syndergaard, what I think about Rosario, Conforto, Nimmo, all that stuff was real. And Brian Cashman swooped in and said, oh, I need pitching. And Cashman's wanted Syndergaard and DeGrom since the Mets were starting to dangle them mid-season last year. So the difference being that Cashman and Alderson did not have a good working relationship, and he and Van Wagenen do. As an agent and Yankees GM, they got along, and they continue to get along. So they started talking, and out of those conversations, look, they had a conversation about making Gary Sanchez a Met at one point. They had many, many conversations about making Syndergaard a Yankee. All that stuff was going on, and then to your point, Doug, why isn't it going on anymore? It's as simple as it was all Brody going, how can I get Realmuto? And they figured that the Marlins' price was going to go down eventually, right? It had to. And then when they calculated that it wouldn't, or wouldn't fast enough, they pivoted and got Wilson Ramos. And I think a lot of fans are happy that they could get a quality catcher without giving up Noah Syndergaard. But that was something that was on the table, and you're right, it went from everyone in the Mets roster is available on a trade to we're not talking about trades anymore. And that is basically revolving around the Marlins catcher.
But it's a genuinely unsettling feeling if you're a Met fan having no idea who on your roster could possibly be safe.
Or is it fun? Because Alderson was conservative, kind of one little move at a time. Is it fun to be like, hey, the Mets are in the news? I don't know. I'm the reporter. You guys are the fans. Was that enjoyable to have those rumors out there? Or was it just like anxiety? Well, even if your team would have been better, even if you would have had an all-star No? Okay. Is it because everybody loves Syndergaard and doesn't want to get rid of him? Fair enough.
Would you guys feel the same way about Syndergaard if he was a finesse pitcher and threw like 90 miles an hour, but still had the exact same stat lines and numbers?
And short hair.
And wasn't as funny on Twitter.
Is it the character or is it the pitching?
I think character means something.
As I said before when I was talking about Jed Lowry, you don't care about social media? Well, I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Some people want the strong, silent type like Jacob deGrom. No, he's not that. I mean, he's strong, but he's not silent. And he has different personality. Yeah, so I think it goes back to the point about how I would, when you're watching a baseball team all year, you probably want guys who you like, who you embrace, who you know something about their personality, and Syndergaard clearly is one of those for a lot of Met fans. So,
do you think they're being a little overprotective of not wanting to trade the shortstop or the outfielders?
Were they being overprotective and not wanting to trade?
Overvaluing Rosario, Nimmo, Conforto?
I think that
Brody, I didn't get the sense that Brody was
the question.
Overvaluing them. Like, the fact that they were out there, I don't know.
He was willing to part with all of them at a certain point, so I guess that doesn't indicate overvalue to me.
I agree with the philosophy that you have to give something up every now and then, and I think the Mets did that. I mean, Jared Kelnick's not in their organization anymore, and that was the toughest pill to swallow, I think, for Met fans in the offseason, just because you think you might have a superstar young outfielder, and he gone. So, to me, though, Andy, from the beginning, what worried me about the trade rumors was the guy that Brody was in love with. JT Realmuto, to me, is a solid player, but he plays a position where, like, you know, he's an under 800 OPS guy at times. And, like, and I know he's a good defensive catcher, but you can find one of those, find the offense elsewhere. I think if all those trade rumors have been tied to a player that Mets fans were like, that guy is a superstar, he's a difference maker when you watch him on the field, and if we have to get rid of Noah Syndergaard, I can understand it. That was not JT Realmuto.
I think real... As
Salicata would know, yeah.
That's right. I think Realmuto is underrated for his whole game, his leadership, his defense, and everything, because he plays for a team that has no fans and is a little off the radar. And Brody knows him was his agent, knows him well, and was like, that guy, that I want that guy as the centerpiece of my team. And if it was 2 years of Real Muto for 3 years of Syndergaard, and you look at Syndergaard having a hard time staying on the field versus an everyday player, I think that was the logic. But obviously they ultimately decided that that wasn't worth doing. So
your reporting also was interesting on what you were just talking about, Mets-Yankees relationship. And I go back and forth on this because, and I'd like to hear your opinions out there if you can, but the idea of the Mets trading with the Yankees. At times, if you're a Met fan and the Yankees have a piece that you really want, they should be able to trade with each other. The problem to me comes in with the paranoia of your player, if you're the Mets and you trade him to the Yankees, suddenly playing better when he's in pinstripes. That's the worst case scenario, in my opinion. But are you saying that the front offices now are ready to totally leave behind that process?
They say they are. Well, they haven't made a deal yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, they could not agree on a Neil Walker or a Jay Bruce or a Lucas Duda back a few years ago because of the Yankee-Met dynamic. And Brody and Cashman say that it's different now. They were like, we didn't get this deal done because it was so complex, but they would talk in the future. And to me, and I said this at the time, I remember, at the winter meetings, but the fact that there were really serious trade talks involving star players, or a star player at least, in Syndergaard going from the Queens of the Bronx tells you that that relationship is more open than it used to be and could result in a trade at some point that benefits Yankees. But I do think that there was a lot of still during that, like, okay, yes, they're talking, but we'll believe it when we see Syndergaard in pinstripes, because then he goes and let's say he helps the Yankees win a World Series. How do the Mets feel about that? Just that is still a tough pill for the Mets to swallow, I think, frankly.
Okay, so I want to now formally ask for questions and wait for the microphone. If you have anything, also, comments are good, too. Like, give us your opinion. We'll talk to you about it. It's not like we have any fascinating answers to some questions. So if you just feel like letting people know your opinions, let us know. We have one back there, one in front here, too.
So my question for you is, how does Keon Broxton improve the team over Juan Lagares? To me, Broxton fills in as a defensive replacement.
He's like the same
guy. At that point, Lagares is better than Broxton, in my opinion. And if it's just health-related, to me, that's not worth the move.
In my opinion, the ceiling on Broxton is higher. I mean, he's hit 20 home runs in the big leagues. So at that point, you're like, okay, if Broxton is just a glove, then he's Juan Lagares. But if he hits 25 homers for the Mets, that's a skill set that Juan Lagares doesn't have. So that's kind of how I look at it. I'm not sure Juan Lagares has the offensive upside. What would you say?
I think it's been a long time since Lagares was good and healthy, and they wanted to protect themselves. Clearly, they didn't diversify. Those are two very, to your point, those are two very similar players. It's not even a platoon. But I would guess that the underlying message there is, if we get something from Lagares, great. But we're not holding out hope after how much, and he's pretty good when he's on the field, but he just can't stay on the field. And I think that you guys might disagree, but I think that the reputation that Lagares developed as this all-world defender was true for a period of time. And I do think he's lost a step when he's even when he's healthy. So I agree with Doug that it's about maybe not believing in the player as much as the organization once did with Lagares and wanting to have alternatives. And you could see both of those guys in the lineup on the same day, too, theoretically, one at a corner and one in center if Lagares is healthy.
Hey, gentlemen, thank you for a great panel. I agree. I appreciate you guys speaking candidly about the fact that you think Bryce Harper would be a great fit for the team and that the team should, by all accounts, be in on a player like that. I wanted to get your opinion. I agree that the Mets have actually had a pretty good offseason, better than they have in several years, and I'm pretty happy about the roster. But at the same time, they've traded away two first-round draft picks. They traded away Kalenic and Dunn, and they have pretty much narrowed their window. Jacob DeGrom is going to be a free agent in 2 years. Zach Wheeler is going to be a free agent. It kind of seems like the time is now. My question is, do you think, even though the roster is better, and I agree, that they've done enough in this window that they have now to really try and compete?
You've nailed, I think, the central question of what Brody's trying to do. I agree with him trading prospects to win now because he has that rotation now, right? He doesn't have any idea what the Mets organization is going to look like in a couple of years. So you might as well go for it now. So to me, trading a 19-year-old and Jared Kelnick, get another 19-year-old in another draft. That's how I look at it. And Justin Dunn, frankly, was not somebody who was seen as a top prospect, I don't think. So it's Kelnick that hurts more to give up of the two. Have they done enough? I think that gets back to what we're talking about, right, with what else might happen in the division still.
I think if you sign a healthy A.J. Pollock, you've done enough, because I think that that's a legitimately good team. Problem is, you don't know that you're going to get a healthy A.J. Pollock. But I've come full circle on this. Last year, after that June for the Mets, late July, I was saying if you want to trade off some assets, this was kind of during the Cy Young season for DeGrom, but it hadn't built up the momentum that it had. I was like, you know what? If you want to rebuild, get some young talent in here, I'd understand it. I now am proud that the Mets decided to go in a direction that it seems like no baseball teams are going in, which is we stunk. We're going to use one offseason to try and get good again. Nobody's doing that. That's why these offseasons are so strange. That's why Harper and Machado are still free agents. It's the teams in the middle. There are teams that are spending a ton of money, and there are teams that seemingly want to lose. And I'm happy that the Mets are at least in the middle or towards the front of that, where they're like, okay, we were bad last year. Let's try and change things up and be good. There's this complacency in Major League Baseball right now where teams are okay with not being good, and that's a big problem for the league. So I like what the Mets have done. I know it's a short window. I agree with what you said. But at least there is a window. You have DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler for 2019 together. Try and win. Why not?
I agree, essentially. And a couple things about that. What you said, Doug, the Mets were very strongly considering in, say, June, trading DeGrom and Syndergaard and trying to start like a 2 to 4 year rebuild. And I was personally like, what are you, crazy? It just took you the better part of a decade to develop this rotation. Just let it run its course. Take a shot and worry about the future when it comes. And I think there's a mentality that comes with baseball organizations sometimes, which is always about the system and where you are in the Baseball America prospect rankings and all this kind of stuff. And the Mets almost went down that road, and then Brody came in and sold ownership a vision of let's try to win now, and as he says, win later, and that's going to be a challenge for him. He's got to build up the system and do that, but they've identified a window to win. And that night that trade was going on, the trade with Seattle, the initial way, like, scouts and baseball people are talking and texting, like, terrible trade, Kelnick's a stud, what is Brody doing, bad trade. And then so I started to think maybe it was a bad trade, and then I texted somebody in the game, and he, like, is this a bad trade? And he said, and the answer to that, he said, you know what? The Mets are trying to win next year, which puts them in the 25th percentile in Major League Baseball, right, probably. And that's something. We'll see if it works. If it falls flat, I think you'll have a discontent fan base. But
I keep going back, by the way, before we get to next question, of Robinson Cano saying, yeah, Brody called me and told me what was next, and it got me really excited. Like, was Brody really like, yeah, Wilson Ramos and Jed Lowry? And Robbie's like, say no more. I'm accepting the no trade
now
clause and going.
Now and win later. Brody's a salesman. You guys have noticed this.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely a salesman.
And I don't mean that as a pejorative.
He's a former agent.
Yeah, he. That's part of what he's here to do. I like Sandy Alderson. He's a really good man. I got a kick out of the way he presented himself. But he wasn't trying to win anybody's approval. He was up there like, I'm Sandy Alderson. Here's the deal. And Brody's like, coming in to sell.
I always liked that Sandy knew that he didn't have to be a fascinating soundbite. It wasn't part of his job. So he'd kind of move his way slowly through an answer and hopefully kind of avoid the tough part.
And they went a different route with
Any other questions? We have one here. We have a couple over here, too. Just wait for the microphone.
Gentlemen, thanks for being here today. We really enjoyed it. And seeing you in person is a little different than watching you on TV. Two-part question. Any news about a DeGrom extension? Second part, what are they going to do with Wheeler? Anything on Wheeler?
DeGrom, they just gave him the biggest raise ever in the history of salary arbitration, as you guys probably know, which was a good step of good. I heard that it was going to be $14 to $16 million. They gave him $17 million, which does not hurt player-team relations, that gesture to go high. They haven't done a lot of talking about an extension yet. but there's mutual interest on both sides. I think if DeGrom, if you get into this
season. We have 2 more minutes, by the way.
If you get into this season and it hasn't happened yet, then you might want to start to wonder, because if he, the closer he gets to having just 1 year of control, the more he's probably going to want to see what being a free agent is like. So keep an eye on that, and it isn't quite moving yet. What was your second question?
Wheeler.
Wheeler, I bet Wheeler is going to leave as a free agent. That's the feeling I get. I haven't seen any attempt to sign him. I think he grew up in Georgia. I think he'd probably be a guy that would enjoy pitching for the Braves someday or something like that. I just think that, look, they tried to trade him like 5 times over the years. He's come on. He's been great. I'm not saying they should let him walk, but you can only sign so many guys, and I just got the feeling he's going to be the one that walks.
We have time for one more. Sorry, guys.
So continuing the theme.
I got it.
Continuing the theme of whether they've done enough, what's your prediction on number of wins, each of you?
89. Does that sound optimistic?
I got you.
I'm at 89. If they signed AJ Pollock, I'd get to 91. It's a two war
so
player.
It's a two war player.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't explain my system.
I'm gonna completely duck that question because I have no idea. But these guys have their hands up, so before we go, I'm going to squeeze in one more question.
Very simple question. Mike Francesa has been very vocal about the Mets rotation being paper thin, in his words. What's your understanding of depth from the rotation, and how are they going to be able to function in 2019?
If those guys are healthy, this team can run the table, as we all know. If they're not healthy, the team's probably not going to go very far, so I guess Mike has a point there. It is what it is. And I think if you're the new GM and you're coming in and saying, what's my strength next year? Hey, it's this rotation. Let's see what we can do with it. But if those guys aren't healthy, that's your ball game, right? That's what you need to have happen.
Agreed.
I guess that's it.
We're good? Thank you guys so much. We will be
thank
back.
Thank you for having us here.
Yeah, thank you for having us here. What an incredibly awesome event.